Where did Ishmael come from? Who was he?
Son of Jacob? Son of Isaac. No, Isaac, Jacob. I got them mixed up now.
He was Abraham's illegitimate. I won't say illegitimate, but yes. Hagar's
yes.
child.
That's right.
I had him another generation removed.
He was the eldest son of Abraham, but he was born to Hagar, who was a handmaiden. That's true. Okay, and that's actually where the Ishmaelites came from. These people that raided the land, they didn't live there. They just came during certain times, and that was just about when harvest time came along, crops were being harvested, and that was an ideal time to come in and take everything. And then they'd wait till the next harvest season and they'd do it again. But it kept them, it kept the Israelites in subjection that way. They did this for 7 years. And every year they would just come in. They were absolutely brutal. And we'll find out what happens to the kings of these people later on because of their brutality. Israelites finally cried to the Lord for relief, and the Lord sent him a young man named Jerubbaal. Anybody know who that was?
That's Gideon.
Gideon.
That was Gideon, yes. And we find that God visited this young man named Gideon, who, after trying God several ways, began to raise an army. He asked God for forgiveness in trying him. Do you remember how he tried God's patience? What did he ask God to do?
Wet fleece, dry ground, wet fleece. Well, okay. Whatever.
That's exactly right. And so God was patient with him and granted him these wishes. And therefore, Gideon had faith. He also talked to an angel. When the angel suddenly left him and disappeared, he realized that this man was actually an angel from God. In Hebrews, the 11th chapter, and verse 1 and 2, we read, "Now faith is assurance hoped for, the conviction of things not seen. For it by it the men of old gained approval from God." Hebrews chapter 11, verses 32 and 33, names Gideon as one of these old men of old who had faith. He started with Abel and went right down through a long, long list of men of old who lived by faith. And he spoke of Gideon in chapter 11 of Hebrews. So Gideon now is assembling an army. And he is by what they call the spring of Herod. And it was a spring that had a creek that flowed out of it. And it's would be near Mount Gilboa in the land of Manasseh. And he sends not only messengers to Manasseh, but he sends them to Asher and Zebulun and Naphtali. And 32,000 soldiers respond. And so they met on this near Mount Gilboa on the highlands, 32,000 strong. Midianites had assembled an army in the valley, And it's estimated they had something like six times that, or somewhere around 200,000 soldiers. Scripture says that they were like the sands of the seashore for numbers. Also like locusts, with camels without measure. So you can imagine 32,000 men standing on the mountainside looking down at this mass humanity and a massive army that's ready to do battle with them. Then God reduces Gideon's army by 22,000 people down to 10,000. This may have been partly due to the law of warfare that the Israelites had laid down for them in Deuteronomy 20, verse 8. And it talks about these laws of warfare that young men who are betrothed, not yet being married, but promised, can be excused from warfare. Also, those who have new land that they've not yet cultivated can be excused from this warfare. Also, someone who built a house and not yet lived in it, they could be excused from warfare. And I'm sure that some of this army probably took advantage of those laws and took off. A lot of them were faint of heart. I think most of them probably were. But I think they joined in the army later on at the fords and slaughtered this army of Midianites. But God tells Gideon now, well, I think we need to shorten this up a little bit more. So can anybody tell me how God accomplished this down and how to 300 persons? So God got rid of 9,700 more. How did he do that?
He tested on how they drink the water.
Okay. Who was that, Sherry?
Yes, that was Sherry.
Oh, okay. Well, can you give us a little bit more detail?
Okay. So he took him down to the water and said, those that drink like a dog, he set them apart from those who went down on their knees to drink.
Okay. And there were 300 that lapped. And those were the ones that God had Gideon choose for his army. So now he's down to 300 men.
Kathy's mother knew that.
Can you imagine if you were in an army of 32,000 and all of a sudden you were down to 300 people and you look down on this 200,000 person Midianite army? You'd probably sit down, if you hadn't already done it, sit down and write your last will and testament. This had to be a pretty scary situation for these three guys, 300 people. I think God sensed a little bit of uneasiness in Gideon. I think he saw that, so he tells Gideon, well, I think maybe you should go down into the Midianite army and go down at night and go into the camp. If you're afraid to do so, take your body servant and you guys go down there and take a look for yourself. So Gideon did this and he walked into the Midianite camp. Now this camp was down in the valley. They're looking up on the mountainside and they're seeing 300 guys. They're probably not going to be putting out any guards around, perimeter guards or anything like that. And I'm sure that they were probably being happy maybe drinking a little bit more than they should, something like that. But they were down in this black valley in the middle of the night. So Gideon walks into the midst of them, and he hears a couple of these Midianite soldiers talking. And one of them said, I had a dream. And I dreamed that this loaf of barley rolled through the camp, destroyed tents, laid them flat. And the other one said, that has to be Gideon and the sword of the Lord. So when Gideon heard that, he knew that was an answer that God gave him. And so he bowed down and prayed, worshiped the Lord at that particular time. They said, well, and they knew about the Israelite God. They said, God has given us into Gideon's hand. So Gideon takes his 300 men and he divides them into three 100 count companies. And he gave them pitchers, clay pitchers, with lights in them, with candles. And he takes their swords and he surrounds this Midianite camp with these three companies. And they also had the trumpets that they had got from the rest of their people that disappeared. And so they broke the pitchers, took out their lights, blasted their trumpets, and yelled out Gideon and the sword of the Lord. And this was in the midst of the Midianite camp. All of a sudden, the Midianites woke up in a panic. It was dark. They couldn't see. They thought they were surrounded by an Israelite army. And in their panic, they began to fight one another, killing one another. And there was just havoc inside this Midianite camp. All they could think about was just getting away and just fleeing and saving their life. And so they were defeated in that manner and routed. So Gideon now sends messengers to an adjoining tribe called Ephraim, and summons them to stand guard over some of the fords of the Jordan River to keep these Midianites from escaping. And the Ephraimites defeat the Midianites at some of these fords, and they capture two of the Midianite princes, who they kill, Oreb and Zeeb. And they cut their heads off, and they delivered them to Gideon. And then once that happened, they got mad. Midianites were a common enemy. And so they should have been happy to have just seen the last of them. But no sooner had they defeated these people than they got mad at the Israelites, and they started quarreling with them. And remember, the Ephraimites are from the tribe of Judah. Joshua was an Ephraimite, and they picked a fight with Gideon and were really, really hot about not being invited by Gideon to fight in this battle. And the reason was pretty petty. Why didn't you call us to join in the fight? And, they could have volunteered. They didn't have to be asked. They could have volunteered, but they didn't do that. But Gideon was humble in his answer and trying to make the peace. And he responded with a question to the Ephraimites, and that was that, isn't the vintage of Ephraim much better than the wine in Manasseh? And this answer satisfied Ephraim. That's a lesson that we could learn from, I think. Gideon showed humility, and I think that's probably the best way to remove envy of others, the sure way to remove strife and kind of calm the nerves of people who are looking for a fight. I think we could probably use this method in our trials today. Certainly someone who's hot under the collar and you give them a humble answer and a quiet answer, a calm, certainly smooths the water. So now Gideon takes his 300 man army and he starts pursuing the Midianites who have crossed the Jordan River. There's about 15,000 of them that managed to escape, and they're heading out through Gilead and through the tribe of Gad, trying to get to their own country for safety. Gideon crosses the river with his 300 men, and they're absolutely exhausted in the fight and in the pursuing of these Midianites. And so they stop on the way, and they stop by the city of Succoth or Succoth. That's located in the tribe of Gad. And he goes up and asks these people, the elders of this city, for some help. Just give us some bread, and that'll suffice. You know, we're chasing these Midianites. And of course, these people in Succoth have seen the Midianites fleeing. They've seen still 15,000 men. And here's 300 men of Gideon pursuing them. They had forgotten that God was on Gideon's side, and they refused to help Gideon and his men. And so Gideon says, well, okay, I'll tell you what, we're going to go on, and we're going to find these people, and when we come back, we're going to punish you for your refusal. And so he kept his temper, and he went on a little further to a city named Penuel. And the same thing happened there. He asked for some bread and some sustenance from the people in Penuel, and they turned him down as well. Well, he had told the people in Succoth that he was going to cut out some briars and thorns from the wilderness on his way back, and he was going to punish him with those. With Penuel, they had a tower in their city. And he said, well, when I come back, we're going to tear down this tower and punish you that way. If you remember that, anybody heard of this town named Penuel before? Can you recall any instance about that? Genesis chapter 35 is where Jacob wrestled with the angel in this area. Also, I think Jacob built a home there. And of course, this is centuries before, but it's not an uncommon story in the Bible. So Gideon pursues this Midianite army east of Gilead, over the hills and into the Midianite country, desert country. And he surprises them again when they thought they were safe. And he defeats them, routs them again. He continues to pursue them and catches these two kings of the Midianites. And these Midianite kings, after some questioning by Gideon, they admit to murdering Gideon's brothers in an earlier battle on Mount Tabor. And so Gideon told him, well, had you left those men, my brethren, alive, I would spare your lives. But since you brutally murdered them, I claim the blood avenger right, which was a law that was an old Israelite law. And we find that located in Numbers 35. And then it's repeated again in 1 Samuel 14 and talks about the someone who murders another person. That murdered person, the victim, his nearest blood relative, male blood relative, can claim the avenger's right and kill that person who committed the murder. And that was used. They set up, if you remember, they set up cities of refuge that people could flee to if you had a blood avenger that was on your trail. So now Gideon gives the opportunity to slay these two kings to his young son, his eldest son at the time. But he was young, and the thought of killing these two kings, he just couldn't do it. And so the kings told Gideon to kill them. So Gideon hacked them up and killed those two kings. Now he's on his way back. He's going to return to Penuel and Succoth, and he's going to take revenge and deal out justice to these. So he gathers up some thorns and briars and comes back to Succoth, and he takes the elders of the city, and he beats them with these briars and these thorns. Had to kind of smart a little bit. You know how we get out here and pick blackberries or something. I can imagine what it would be to be whipped by those things. You had to be, rip and tear your flesh. When he got to Penuel, he took his promise and told him, I told you I was going to burn down this fort. And so he burned down this tower and killed a bunch of men who were elders in that city. So do you think it was just for Gideon to do this to these two towns?
You warned them. I think that it was just in his eyes, and it sounds like it was just in God's eyes.
Yeah, they had forgotten God. And, you know, even though these were Israelites, they did not help Gideon and his army. And so they paid for it. So now we are at this point where the Midianite army is destroyed. In verses 22 to 28, we find that the Israelites are now offering Gideon the position of king over them. You have to remember that this is a confederation of tribes, individual tribes, and they had no king in Israel at that particular time. And we remember that everybody did what was right in their own eyes all this time. It hasn't changed. They still have no king. But they decided they wanted Gideon to be their king. Well, this wasn't the whole 12 tribes of Israel that was voting on this. This was just three or four. So I think it was an honest request from these people. Gideon had delivered them, had gotten them away from this horrific bondage that they had suffered for 7 years. And so I think it was an honest request from them for Gideon to be their king. But I think Gideon gave him an honorable answer as well. And he says, no, I won't be your king and rule over you, but God will be your king and he'll be the ruler. So was kind of an interesting response. Gideon was humble, and we see that all throughout this period of time. He did make a request, though, and he asked if he could have the earrings taken from these Midianites who were slain. And they laid out a blanket in front of him, and everybody passed by and threw these earrings on this blanket. And these Midianites, and I understand that that's basically the same way that they do nowadays. These wandering people that travel the desert, even to this day, like to gaudy up their things with earrings and nose rings and all that kind of stuff. They like to beautify their camels and so forth like this, even today. But anyway, they estimate that he got about $25,000 in today's money. And he took that and he made an ephod, which is a kind of a breastplate that we find that the priest wore. The Levite priest wore, and he had this made, and became a snare. He did it for a private reason, but it became a snare to him and his family. And the Israelites started using it as a religious symbol, and so off they went in the latter years of Gideon's life. He lived to a ripe old age, though, but he had 71 sons, had lots of wine. I'm surprised he lived to a ripe old age, having 71 wives. Okay. Anybody have a comment about that?
I probably will later.
My wife said she'll have a comment later in private. But anyway, he had 71 children. Now, this is 71 sons. How many daughters he had, who knows? They're not mentioned, but he had a bunch of kids. There was one of them, though, that was not afforded part of the inheritance because he was born to a concubine that Gideon kept. And we'll study about this man in our next lesson. Anybody know who that might be?
Abimelech.
How's that?
Abimelech.
Abimelech, that's exactly right. And we're going to find out if this guy's a good guy or not. But we'll study about him next week. So after this, after Gideon passed away, here we go again. They're going to have 40 more years of peace in the land. And after Gideon's death, his family was shown absolutely no respect. And of course, the Israelites went right back to worshiping the male. And it's just kind of a broken record. They're back, right back. Didn't last very long. So anyway, that's about all I have on that particular chat, those two chapters. Has anybody got any comments that we need to talk about and how we can apply these lessons today?
Ron?
Yes.
I go back to the two cities, Pinel and Sukloth.
Uh-huh.
And it seems to me that the call of God was good enough for the rest of the tribes, whatever Gideon sent as a message that this is what God says you need to do was enough for them. And these two cities rejected the same message. And it's sort of like anybody who rejects the message of God, they pay the price for it. And it's was then and it is now.
It's kind of interesting because, you know, even though they must have been awestruck when they saw this Midianite army first come westward, 200,000 men with camels. It must have been awe-inspiring for, well, I don't know about inspiring, but it was awesome that they stood by and watched these people come by. And then a short period later, they watched 15,000 come by instead of 200,000. Obviously in a state of panic and rout. And then when Gideon comes along, they saw 300 men, it wouldn't take too much to figure out that God had helped Gideon and his 300 men. And yet they still had forgotten God and forgotten his promises and refused to help Gideon with any supplies.
Hey, Brother Ron, I'm sorry to interrupt.
Nope.
I got like 5% on my phone. It's going to die anytime soon. I'm sorry. I'm listening to your lesson, and I'm sorry if it just shuts off. I'm sorry.
Hey, Ron.
Sir.
It occurs to me that Gideon seems to be a person who wants to let God be in charge. Even when they come and they say, we want to make you king, he says, no, I don't want to be the king. I want God to be the king. And then he makes this ephod. I don't think he made the ephod so that they would come and worship it, but
yeah,
the good intentions that Gideon may have had were overruled by the people. They took it upon themselves to come and worship this ephod.
Yes.
You know, I think about why we don't have a lot of things that would be so inspiring. You know, what happened to the cross that Jesus died on? Well, nobody knows. It was probably taken apart and reused for the wood and the nails by the Romans because that's just what they did. It's as if you had the cross, people would worship the wooden stake instead of worshiping God. That's so right. Maybe in God's wisdom, he let those things go. We don't have the ark. People would probably worship the ark if they found the ark.
That's right.
Just like we would worship the cross if we found the cross.
Well, you see so much of that today, even with the Catholic Church, Lutherans, whatever like this, they find substitutes to use in their worship. And I think they've lost totally sight of exactly what God's purpose is, why he's there. Certainly right. Gideon made this, I think, for a private use, and yet it became a snare to him and his family and the Israelites as a whole.
You know, we set up things that we worship as well. It's possible for us to build a building, to have a place to worship, and then worship the building. That's really sad, but I think that's something that we always have to be afraid of, that we always have to, not afraid of, we always have to be aware of it and take pains not to let that happen. So don't worship a man. Don't make Gideon your king just because he did what God wanted him to do. And don't worship stuff.
I can't recall. Now maybe somebody can refresh my mind about not worshiping what is given or what is made, but worship the person who made it. Worship the giver. Talking about, of course, God who made and gave everything. And I can't remember where in scripture that is.
You may be thinking about Romans 1 around verse 39. My memory work is out of the King James, unfortunately. It says they worshiped and served the, even as they did not like to retain God in their knowledge, God gave them over to a reprobate mind. They worshiped and served the creature more than the creator.
Yes, that was what I was trying to think.
What a bad exchange to worship something that God made instead of worshiping the God that made it.
Ron, newcomer, you're sure quiet tonight.
Why are you picking on me?
No, because I can see you.
I felt that it was best that you just go ahead and talk away. I'm sure that Sharon is enjoying listening to you.
Lenny, you have anything you want to say?
Let me unmute myself. Well, when we're studying Judges, you go back to the days when the Israelites were slaves, and it's just a cycle of sin. Every so often when they get worldly, they sin and turn their backs on God. When you look at Gideon, he needed God's help to defeat the Midianites. He only had 300 men. And that's not many going against a huge army. But God was with him and God defeated them. People got to remember, keep God in their life.
Why do you suppose, just asking generally, why do you suppose that God reduced Gideon's army from 32,000 to 300? What was his purpose in doing that?
God told him.
If God said, the credit.
He said God has to get the credit. Exactly. Yeah.
Well, anybody else have that? And that's true. Thank you. I think God did this, and it talks about reducing Gideon's army, because he said, if I leave it 32,000 people, then you're going to start boasting after this battle that you accomplished this by yourself and not without my help. And so in order to make it obvious that it was God's doing, he reduced his army by, 31,700 and left 300 guys to do his will. So then it was obvious that God had a controlling hand in this. These 300 men had to be heroes the rest of their lives, that's for sure. And were probably honored throughout their lives as those heroes, and also people who had faith in the Lord. So they probably had a lot of people listen to what they had to say.
Well, you would think so, but the people didn't respect Gideon and his family. So yes, I have a tendency to believe you got about, oh, just a couple of years past this and they forgot. I see the same thing working out today. Think about how long ago it was that the Twin Towers came down on 9/11, and those policemen that ran into that rubble to try to rescue anybody and everybody that they could, along with the firemen. Everybody else is running away, and the firemen and the police ran into that building. And now today, we're shooting policemen. I mean, how bad can we get? How easily we forget what has happened in the past. And I know that there are some policemen that do bad things, but I think in the overall, just to impugn the motives of the police and the firemen and the military men and women that served this country, I think is just an illustration of the same thing that happened to Gideon. They wanted to make him king one day, and the next day, it's like they forgot.
Yeah. And going along with that, I saw that one of the groups that was going to be protesting in Eugene asked for police protection.
Yeah.
I hope they said no.
I don't know. You know, it's the federal government being in there in Portland, you know, and the mayor and the governor are complaining about them being there. I would be tempted to just pull them all out and let them have at it. they're looking like idiots already, you know, and that would be even more so.
Well, when we started this study, God made a very clear statement about his intentions with the Israelites. In chapter 2 and verse 2, he said that, I told you to do all these things, to tear down the altars, but you have not obeyed me. And this is what you have done. And he said, so I will not drive them out before you, but they will become as thorns in your sides, and their gods will be a snare to you. So God told them, if they did not eradicate the idolaters out of their land, that they would always be a snare for them. And that's exactly what they were. And because of that, because they sinned, then the Lord allowed plunderers and people that would enslave the Israelites to come into the land and take them over. God allowed that because they did not follow what he told them to do. They did not complete the conquest of Canaan.
We have a number of judges coming up. But we're going to find that they just don't learn. And it's like Dean says, we're the same thing today. We just a short memory, and we forget the good things that happened and go right back to the bad things, and just 180 degree turnaround. So it's really sad, you know, that we can look at this and we can see these things happening today. But all you have to do is look at the history, and you see that it would just, unfortunately, not being able to learn. It's just really sad. So, Charles, how about, do you have anything to say, Charles?
Well, the only thing that came to mine, Lenny kind of covered it about the Israelites. God did not want the Israelites to take credit for their victory against the Midianites. And so he decreased them down to 300. And the question that I would have is, did all of the 300 escape? Were there any deaths on that last bit, last grouping of Israelites of 300?
I don't think we know. I don't think we're told that. I mean, I don't recall it anyway.
Yeah, I don't either. I just.
But the purpose was to show that God was in control, and that that was a miracle, because how could 300 men take over such a big army? And that was the whole point of it.
Yep.
To give the credit to God. But I don't remember anything about if they were left or, you know, in the battle.
Lee said that she looked it up and the odds were 450-1 of Gideon's men. I mean, when God is on your side, just think of the power that is with you when you're doing God's work and being faithful to God. It's amazing.
You know, I'm also very impressed that in spite of all the times that Israel rejected God, God graciously always listened to them. And he did so much. He was, like we talked about this morning, he was so patient. He was so long-suffering. And I have to say, in my own life, God has blessed me and I've misused it. And I guess I'm just very thankful that God is patient with me as he is with everyone. So I think it's a wonderful testament to God's grace and God's patience, as well as our own failings.
Anybody else have any other comments?
Just that the whole human race has a short memory. I can remember when I was quite a bit younger, my dad would tell me not to do something, then I'd go out and do it. And when I got caught, he'd say, "Well, you got a short memory, don't you, son?"
Yes, I can remember. I can hear even now my dad's belt coming through those belt loops.
But you heard it more than one time, didn't you?
Well, yeah. yeah, I've been trying to tell everybody I wear a halo, so I can't admit those things too often.
You have a rusty halo?
I had some tough times in my early life. I was a slow learner.
Oh, you sure learned a lot then, since then.
Oh, well, thank you. Does that mean
you got all these good lessons and all that good singing and you overcame whatever?
I will give thanks to the Lord for you.
Oh,
thank you so much. Well, I'll tell you, I have had, I got a real great card from Lee Carter the other day, telling how much he appreciates, what I'm doing, and that's really encouraging when you get stuff like that. I've had a number of people call me, and Susie Rowe, for instance, has always been gracious and encouraging me, and that's, I really appreciate that kind of stuff. we get to doing things every day, and we don't think how much that means to people, I guess. But it certainly means a lot to me. So I thank you very much from the bottom of my heart. So let's not forget, tomorrow night we have our prayer meeting. Love to see everybody there. If you can make it, we need to send a lot of prayers out. We've got so many people that are sick, need the Lord's graciousness and care. And we need to always remember those folks as we go to our Heavenly Father. Hope that they have peace and can recover their health.
Again, I got this email.
And then Thursday night, don't forget our class on learning about the Bible and learning how to read it for all it's worth. And we'll look forward to that next lesson from Dean. So.